Welcome to the Bicast, the podcast of the bisexual community.
We are speaking with Camille Holthaus, director of the Bisexual Organizing Project. Welcome, Camille.
Thank you.
We are covering two topics today, two exciting topics for me. First, of course, is the upcoming BECAUSE conference in April. And let's go over what is BECAUSE.
Well, BECAUSE stands for the Bisexual Empowerment Conference, a uniting, supportive experience. And it started in 1992 here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's the only conference in the United States that is by, for, and about the bisexual, pansexual, fluid, queer, and unlabeled community. And this year we're very excited to be hosted by the University of Minnesota's Queer Student Community Center at the Kauffman Student Union on the Twin Cities campus, April 17th through April 19th.
I can't wait. It's going to be great.
I'm very excited. We've got a lot of fun things in store.
So I'm really encouraging the leadership in my local BI community to come to BECAUSE this year. Really, because you know, we kind of co-train each other. And I have more experience as a BI activist, so I do some of that training. But it would be great to be able to go in the sessions and to learn, you know, how to be leaders in a group.
Yeah, one of the things, we have a number of groups who are attending together, so more than two or three people from an area. And I really encourage people to do that because you will get all kinds of ideas and energy from this. And if you can start talking about it with the people you're going to work with at home right away, I think that helps translate into actual activity and progress in your local groups. So it's not, you know, it's great if someone can come and then bring the information back. It's even better if a group can come and kind of help each other actually start to change things once they get home.
Get it right there. Get it to focus. Do the grassroots work, right?
Yep. Well, and I know we're going to talk about programming a little later, but the other piece of that is, you know, if there's a conversation you really want to have, I encourage you to submit a workshop about it. Workshops don't have to be someone standing in front talking. They can be about starting a conversation. So okay. If there's something that people out there really want to hear from other people, and maybe they have the seed or the nugget of something that they want to brainstorm or talk with other people, submit it as a workshop and have a roundtable and just do it. That's part of having this kind of community conference, is being able to have people put in there what they want to experience.
Yeah, awesome. So BOP has changed its registration cost this year. What is different?
We have. In past years, we've always had a apply for a scholarship or request a scholarship option. And last year, we gave 40 scholarships out of 200 attendees. And this year, we have replaced that because having to request something is a barrier. And we are trying to reduce as many economic barriers to attending this conference as possible. So this year when you register, there is a pay what you can option, and there is also a register for free option, because it is more important to us that people attend than that they pay. And I know this kind of surprised Lynette last year, but we run this conference really lean, but we also get sponsorship and support from organizations and some key individuals. We're lucky to have people in our community who are able to give more so that other people can come. And so we really encourage people to use those options, especially if it's the difference between being able to come and not come. For people who are traveling, especially, we know that you're already have costs associated with travel and maybe with lodging. So we really encourage you to look at those options if that's going to make a difference on being able to come or not. And part of the reason we feed people all the time because one of our attendees last year felt like we were forcing food on her every 2 hours or so. But part of the reason we do that is that once you get here, we have a reception on Friday. We feed breakfast and lunch on Saturday. We feed brunch on Sunday. And we just want people to be able to come and experience the conference and not be worrying about how much they need to spend on lunch or where do they need to go find food and that sort of thing.
completely fantastic. So, for someone like me who, you know, has to be aware of costs like that, I could probably try to get my airfare early and get a good deal and not worry so much about what I do when I get there.
Exactly. And we do accommodate special food needs. Last year, the person who was organizing food was new, and she was a little amazed at the list of special food requests that we got. But we have vendors for where we get our food that are able to accommodate that. So vegetarian, vegan, allergies, lactose-free, gluten-free, everything. We can do it.
Wow, thanks.
Okay. I was cut off for a couple of seconds, but the one question would be accommodations. Hotel rooms, et cetera, those are also big costs for people.
They are, and we are getting a block of rooms at a discounted rate that's fairly close to the where we're having the conference, which is the Kauffman Student Union. And there is actually a light rail line running that is – there's a station about a block from the hotel, and there's a station about half a block from the conference location. So – and the hotel runs a shuttle to anywhere on campus for anyone who's staying there on demand.
Okay.
So we're going to get hotel information up on the website very soon. My hotel person is just finalizing the rooms and the rate, so we'll get that up. We are a big metro. I encourage people, if that seems like it's more than you can afford or you don't want to be staying kind of right in the middle of Minneapolis, there are a lot of options in this city. The one thing I caution people, and part of the reason we're encouraging people to look at the light rail, is parking on campus is very expensive. So we are also going to be posting information about where to park that's cheaper and bring and take the light rail into the location. So if you park on site, it's anywhere between $8 and $12 a day, and that really adds up with a three-day conference.
Again, fantastic.
Yeah. I see you have some exciting keynote speakers planned. Can we talk about them?
I would love to talk about them. I'm really excited. On Friday night, we have Andrea Jenkins. She lives in the Twin Cities and is a nationally known trans activist. She also identifies as bisexual, and we look forward to hearing her talk about her work in community organizing and her work especially with elected officials and in politics. Right now, she is an advisor to Minneapolis City Council and has been very active on the public policy and elected official side. Matter of fact, we thought we weren't going to have her because she was going to, I believe, D.C. to work on some national trans activism. And as it turned out, we lucked out and she is able to join us on Friday. So very lucky, very fortunate to have a big name activist who I've heard she has a plan for her life. And so she's hopefully going to share how she came up with some of that and talk to us about how that translates into being a leader in different ways. And Saturday after lunch, we have Eliel Cruz, the Advocate.com's bi editor, and as I like to introduce him, the man that made the task force apologize.
Oh, so, yeah, he did.
Yes, he did. He also runs his own 501c3 organization, and he's really active in Christian LGBT organizing. So I think he brings a lot to the discussion as a younger activist who is already really having an impact in a lot of different places. I think you just had him on the show recently, right?
We haven't had him on the show yet. I just had dinner with him a couple weeks ago, though. That was
nice.
That was kind of cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I haven't seen his full bio yet. I've been asking him because I can piece it together from different things across the internet, but I have this feeling when I see it all in one place, it's going to be even more impressive than I already think he is.
It's pretty amazing. He's always going. I mean, he's always going somewhere.
And
he's in school.
We have a special event on Sunday. The editors of Recognize Stories of Bisexual Men, Robin Oakes and Dr. Harakuti, are going to be talking about their book in a plenary session. So we're very excited to have them come and share their work and their experience in putting that together.
Great. And probably that'll help them get some more sales even.
I certainly hope so, because we really want to see that book succeed. And then just last week, I booked filmmaker Alexia Anastasio. She is bringing her bisexual existential drama called Little Fishes. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be one of the things that you can choose to do on Saturday evening. We're putting on a community celebration, and there's going to be a DJ, there's going to be a film, there's going to be a place to just hang out and have coffee, and there's going to be a board game room, because around here we like to play a lot of board games. So we're hoping more than just conference attendees will join us, and we'll have a good community social.
Oh, good, John. We'll see a movie together. Cross our fingers.
Yeah, if I can swing it to make it out there, I would love to get there. Last year it was smack dab in the middle of our Pride week, so. You know.
Oh, the timing last year sucked. There is no other way to put it.
But I'll tell you, it's when I realized what your dates were for last year. That's when I booked the Lorraine and A. Billy for our Pride event and made sure it was early in the week. It was like, I was glad I got like kind of an early announcement that this was going to happen, and it just like, oh well, I better get on this really soon and make this happen. So.
Yeah, due to some local logistical challenges, we were in June for 2 years, but prior to that, we had always been in April. And our goal for the last 2 years has been to get ourselves back into April. So for the people who are like, why are you in June? We're like, we know. We're working on it.
We're working on it. Well, we're glad you're back in April. And, you know, and then March, of course, is going to be start everything off with the Awareness Month. So, hey, good timing.
Yeah.
So what other workshops are on the agenda?
Well, every year we solicit workshops from the attendees. Proposals are due this year on February 21st. So there's a form you fill out on our website to suggest them. And while we have a leadership theme, and I'm hoping to see some really interesting programming on that, we always have workshops like bi and trans identities and introductory things and what we might call 201 classes for people who want to get a little more in-depth on topics. Mm-hmm. And then we always have topics of interest to the community, like intimacy and sexual health. Our keynote presenters always submit workshops, so I'm looking forward to see what Andrea and Eliel bring.
Yeah.
And this year we have 6 workshop sessions, so there's a lot of time to do different things. Last year we had 4, and we really wanted to expand that. And this year we also are starting something new. We have one entire workshop session, which is going to be devoted to intersectional identities, including working within a social justice framework and exploring how we make sure that we are inclusive of all the many identities that people who are attracted to more than one gender bring with them. So that's going to be a new experiment.
That's going to be awesome, because that was one of the things that when a Creating Change conference is an area we could really work on. I mean, we really need some more tools on that and more voices. So, yay, that's great.
Yeah, locally, this is actually a pretty big initiative for us. We work within social justice movement, obviously, because we are a marginalized community, but we feel it's really important for our community to work on social justice within our community as well, and make sure that we're including everyone, and that as we make gains, that everybody is coming with us.
So, Camille, is there anything? Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the conference?
Well, for more information, you can go to our website, which is www.becauseconference.org. And we add more information as we get closer to the conference. So even after you've registered, I encourage people to check back for more information on hotels and upcoming workshops. We'll get the bios up there. And be sure that people know that the conference is open to and designed for everyone who's attracted to more than one gender, regardless of what label you use or don't, and our allies, of course.
So we're just going to take a small break, and we will be right back.
Okay.
This is Margaret Cho, and you're listening to The Bicast, podcasting for the bisexual community.
We are Clone Dance Party, an Orphan Black introcast.
There was so many questions that weren't answered that I was like, well, but I have to know.
Vic doesn't seem that smart. I don't know what Sarah was doing with him.
That's a really testament to the actors, because I really feel like they're different people. So yeah. She's really doing a good job.
I totally agree, Lynette. I forget that they're the same person.
I am totally unobjective about Allison. I love that character to death.
She became my least favorite clone.
Clone Dance Party in iTunes, on Facebook, and on Twitter.
Okay, and we're back, and we are going to now talk with Camille about her exciting new article, The Future of Bisexual Activism.
Yes. Let's talk about the future of bisexual activism. It really ties into the Because theme.
Well, it isn't really a coincidence. I'm in charge of Because this year, and leadership is a passion of mine, and so is community organizing. Last summer, QED, a journal of GLBTQ world making, contacted me to write an article, and I really wanted to explore the structure of bi activism and where we need to get to in order to achieve our goals. So we need to move beyond fragmented community organizations into a place where we have more sustainable organizations and more connections between each other so that we can move our agendas forward in a more coherent way. I feel like there's been some great work done on that in the last couple of years in terms of connecting leadership across the country. And now I'd like to see us put the structure in our organizations to support that continuing.
I think like Faith has done a wonderful job in Binet USA, like coming on. I think those are two really good, exciting places where we can start to connect again.
Oh, I think so. And having the larger organizations who have been around for a while, and I would put Bisexual Organizing Project in there as one that's had contact with a lot of people over the years, that's a great place to start. But none of us have paid staff, and none of us navigate foundations and governmental programs and community research as well as we could. Right now, we are all still much too dependent on the energy and activism of individuals. And
yes,
so I would really like to get us to the point where when Faith or the leadership of BLR is busy with one thing, we don't feel like everything else is on hold.
Totally agree. We are running off of individual people at this point. I mean, organizations are there, but it's due to the hard work of volunteerism that it is happening. And we really, building the infrastructure would be a tremendous help. Tremendous help. I want to go over a couple of the things that you have in the article. You have some key elements, four key elements that you talk about. And here, I'll just read it. Here are four key elements needed to move by activism forward. First, there needs to be a better understanding of grantors and other institutions about the needs of the bisexual community. Second, the bi community needs to have organized structures in place to allow grantors and institutions to work effectively with bisexual organizations. Third, bi individuals need to understand where and how they get involved as activists and why it is important to do so. And fourth, there must be high quality research on the bi community to identify needs and provide evidence about the disparities experienced by bisexuals. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm sure there are other things that would. Yeah, I think there's other things that would be helpful as well, but I just don't see how we move forward into a more stable and structured nonprofit environment without nailing those down.
Yeah, and you talk about your vision for the future, and it's, the future of bisexual activism will require a new set of skills, a new level of organizational commitment, and a broad vision. However, it builds on both a rich history of an inclusive community and a new commitment by activists to national coordination and leadership. Bisexual activists will be creating more types of organizations to support this work, including political fundraising organizations, research institutions, and foundations. Although this vision is ambitious, the energy, momentum, and expertise present in the bisexual community today provides just the place to begin such an ambitious undertaking. And I have to agree, we are full of powerhouses, and we could really do some major work.
I agree, and I think part of putting this piece out into the world is to give us a place to start this conversation, and for people who are not fortunate enough to be in one of our centers of activism, but who may have these skills and abilities, to realize that we can start connecting and really make things happen. The more connected we are electronically and by coming together at conferences and meetings, the more we're going to be able to help each other create this really rich nonprofit environment supporting the bi community.
Throughout the article, you do see some great things. You talk about our rather depressing history of activism. It's been like, you know, a lot of people, you know, shoving their heads up against the wall for a very, very long time. But they kept going, you know. And you touch on all kinds of subjects, what it is to be, what defines a bisexual activist, what that includes, and, you know, our talk about what our future could be and will be. So it's a really great article.
Thank you.
I didn't have a point there. I just wanted to tell you it was great.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is really important is the work that is being done by some of the large organizations, including BOP, to get in front of organizations with bi-essentials presentations, talking about our health disparities, talking about our social disparities, and really educating people about why the things that they believe, the stereotypes about bisexuals, are not true. A lot of people really believe that the stereotypes that they know about bisexuals are an accurate description of us. And one of the first things we have to do is educate them around that. And then I think we're going to see movement inside these organizations, especially when we start bringing statistics to them that say, when you privately survey people who are active in the LGBT community, you find that over half of them respond that they are bisexual or some other label that describes being attracted to more than one gender. And people will begin to understand that not only have we always been there, and we are there, but that our community has some special needs that are not being met by the programming that's happening right now, and that our community doesn't show up until there's something for us because of years and years of having uneven receptions within LGBT organizations. The other thing I was going to say about the group, about being connected to community centers, is I keep saying when I go do presentations here in our area, we should not be doing all of this. We can't. There's no way even an organization as big as Bisexual Organizing Project can provide all of the services that the bi community needs. And so we are working with other organizations to build their bi programming, because we shouldn't be doing it all. It should be being done, pieces of it, by every organization that works with the LGBT community.
Another thing is, you know, I think in terms of visibility, and I saw the space that says, you know, C4s and PACs. You know, lots of us have done tons of lobbying work as individuals because the organizations that we're part of are C3s and are very cautious about doing that kind of political organizing. And, you know, it's one of the things that we need is sometimes just to put on a bisexual hat from an organization that doesn't have to worry about, not getting involved in political work.
Oh, definitely. And one of the models we see here is with an organization called Outfront Minnesota that BOP works with quite a bit. They actually run as three separate organizations, 501c3, 501c4, and I believe as a PAC is the third one, so that they can do the wide range of services and activism that they do. And I'm hoping that in the future we're going to see more things like that branch out of existing bi-organizations.
Because, you know, I mean, for years we lobbied on all the bills in Maryland, and you know, people don't recognize that there were a lot of bisexual activists coming out and doing lobbying and doing grassroots organizing. You know, they think, oh, well, it was the gay community that did it. And when we're not representing ourselves as organizations, even as bisexual individuals, our work is not seen.
Right, which whenever we show up in a space, we are usually assigned a identity that is what we expect to see in that space, not and bisexual or pansexual, fluid, but none of those are options that they think of first.
So I am assuming that you feel it is time to take the next step and focus on the long-range planning that we need to achieve for our community?
It is time. We have some great momentum going with the connections being made between both what I would call de facto leaders, people who are providing thought leadership and organizational leadership, our past leaders. There's just a lot of energy right now, and our community has been in very similar places before, and then it didn't move on to creating these more stable structures and having better connections to funders and the things that you need if you're going to continue operating on a long-term basis in a nonprofit environment. In the article, I talk a little about the challenges for staffed organizations to work with unstaffed organizations. And I think sometimes we forget to think about what we look like from the other side of the table. And as much energy and enthusiasm and expertise as we may have, that's a huge gulf to bridge between staffed and unstaffed organizations. So I think that's one of the first steps, is whether it's within our bi organizations or within LGBT organizations, there have to be people who are paid to work on bi issues full time. And I think there needs to be more structure around our communities. The community work we do is really important. When we get together socially and for potlucks and we do pride festivals, those are really important because that builds community, which we know bisexuals find difficult to find. But if we're going to go play in the nonprofit world, we have to start having more visible and more structured activity that hooks into what is essentially a huge industry in the U.S. So I really would like us to figure out how to take these next steps, by partnering with more established organizations or by building our own out.
I think just at being able to hire managerial staff to take care of things that we really shouldn't be spending all of our time doing, so the activists can actually work on activist work rather than, bookkeeping, you know, things like that would be a big help. I mean, I don't think people understand that it's, you know, it's not like we have a staff there doing our bookkeeping or making our phone calls, writing our letters, doing those things. It's us. And it, you know, it would be much better if we could just concentrate on the activism part.
Yeah. I will say one tension that I've seen in our community over the course of decades is...
Oh, exactly.
The grassroots activist versus the professional bisexual, and the idea that people are being paid to do the work has been a tension on and off through the years. And I think it runs through any kind of activist work. People that have been on the ground for years and years and years, and then they see that somebody is making a lot of money doing it as a tension. And I think it's one that we've had because we've been so voluntary for so many years that it's really hard to make that leap forward, even internally.
But we have to. We absolutely have to. I mean, because we're burning people up. We just burn them out. They can't afford to keep going like that.
Well, and the other thing is, remember, our health disparity statistics are being used to fund LGBT organizations who are not turning around and funding bi programming. So other people are already using our money. So I would like to see our money, which is already being used by other people for other things, be used for our community. When you aggregate your statistics and you talk about, you know, gay and bisexual men in a single data point and lesbian and bisexual women in a single data point, that is skewing the results. And we're talking about huge disparities in health and in sexual violence that are funding programs that our people aren't going to because they don't feel welcome. So something needs to change in how we explain that. And so right now, I don't know of anybody, any organization that's paying any person to work full-time on bi issues. And I just waiting for the time I say that. I've been saying that for years. Someday someone's going to correct me, and I can't wait. But so far, nobody's been able to point anybody out to me.
I can't wait either. I think we should have a little party when it happens.
And the high-paid staffer that got hired has to pay for the dinner.
Yeah, they got to pay for the dinner. Okay, Camille, anything you'd like to add about the article?
I really encourage people to read it. It's not... It is not a dense academic article, and I don't think I'm a very dry writer, so it's not difficult to get through. But I really want it to be the beginning of a conversation for this community. There are not enough details in there to even loosely call it a roadmap, but until you get something down for people to react to, we can't even start to talk about this, really. And so I'm throwing this out there knowing that sometimes community can be vicious when someone actually takes a stand on something. But I put this out there as a beginning of a conversation to figure out where we go from here and go there so that we don't have to, in 10 years, be looking back and going, oh, well, now we're here where we were again in 2015.
Well, we appreciate it. It is a very easy read, and it is very good informational. It's a great starting point. Great way to start some conversations and get them going.
Thank you. And it does have a lot of references in it for people who would like to, you know, who want to dig into the data. I'm enough of a research person to have gone through and read, at least kind of verified that I trusted the sources I was using for the data that I present in there. So I'm hoping it's also a resource for people who would like to be able to talk to other people about our past and about our disparities and the changes that need to be made.
All right. And you have a link to the actual PDF file from the site. Is that correct?
Right now, it is from my personal WordPress blog. And
okay.
I believe you're putting – you have the link for that. Bob is going to link to it from there. The writing agreement that I signed with the journal says that for the first 12 months, it can only be posted on a personal page. And after 12 months, Bob can host it on their own. But for now, it has to link through.
Well, that's okay. We can link it that way.
Yeah. It's a little complicated, but it has to do with the agreement with the journal.
Well, that's great. Thanks.
So this is my time to say all links will be provided on the site.
I really appreciate you coming today, Camille. Lots of good information. Can't wait for April. And everybody, please check out the article. It is a good read. And I want to remind everybody, you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, and you are bisexual. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Now, I'll tell you what, man, I ran into so much disability, so many disability problems and treatment on this trip. I am just fit to be tired. I mean, I run into it all the time, but
yeah,
it was just concentrated there. And I just, a lot more happened. I mean, and it all accumulated when I had to get off the bus, my TriMet bus, get on it. And so I'm waiting for him to put the ramp down because I had my walker and everything. And he looked at me and I says, I can't get up that. And he goes, Well, you can try and lift that up, and then if it doesn't work, I'll put the wrap down. And boy, I lost it. I just totally lost it. You know, it was just no one has the right to do that to you. I have many stories on that, and I'll get into it later. But
I'd have gotten
so angry. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Bynet USA or the Bicast crew.
Nip it back.